Okay, we're back.
We're back.
So we just talked about understanding what our expenses are and how there may be levers we can pull to affect those, and then also understanding what our income is and how we might be able to affect that. So it kind of leads us to the middle, right? In theory.
And for the people listening, they might think like this is just so like obviously we should know these things, but just in practice, I see it all too common. Like I don't know percentages, but most of the time, people don't know what they make really. They don't know what they spend really. They don't know if there's anything left over. Everything's happening kind of just like by default. It's just happening, and they're reacting to it as it happens. And as guides, as climbers, we know that's not a successful formula. So it's a same mindset for dealing with your finances, being intentional. I'm going to take the income piece a little bit of a step forward and think of like a concept that's like net revenue or net income, which is different than what you'd think of kind of net income. But it's that as guides, you need things, gear, transportation, but probably mostly gear. And then I would say maybe travel if you guide in different areas of the country, right? You need to spend a fair bit of money in order to generate your income, right? Gear's expensive. And so that's something where you want to think about, okay, like, what do you need to spend in order for making your income possible? And that's gear, travel, maybe there's like permitting or licensing or things like that. But almost know what those things are and what the recycle rate is of your ropes and cans and all of those things, and have a general idea of, say, I spend about I don't know, $1,000 a year on gear or plane tickets to and from places. So as I'm earning my income, I need to be building in those expenses, right? And I'll share the way I do this. And this would also, the same strategy would work with future expenses. Like, okay, and like, what would be a common expense for a, say, like a multi-pitch guide course or something like that? Maybe you have to travel to do that. So it's like, I get my single pitch, and then maybe in a year or two, I'm going to go get my multi-pitch or whatever it is. I know within some reasonable accuracy how much that's going to cost me. So I need to start building that in now, so it's not a lump sum expense when that time comes. The way I do this in kind of my own life is like, I know what my expenses are. I know how much I need to keep the household going. So all of my revenue, all of my income goes into one bucket, right? Goes into an account. And as irregular as that may be, it all just hits one place. I don't ever spend from that account. I just then draw out of that kind of like a regular monthly income or salary that covers all my personal expenses. And I leave in there the amount that I know I'm going to spend anyway for things like licenses, or in your case, gear or travel or the next guide course, right? So that strategy could really help mitigate this risk of irregularity of income. And this goes back to why I started the conversation with expenses, is like, if you know really well what your expense need is, and you can just have all your income go in one place and then slowly draw out just what you need to run your life, that way there you can kind of let some accumulation happen, which can smoothen out those gaps in income that you might have due to seasonal changes, due to a minor injury, or cover those expenses like the next certification. And that's super important too. If you're like, okay, I've identified my income situation, days average value per day or whatever. And I can increase that formula by going and getting this next certification, but I can't do that because I don't have the money saved to do it. So by kind of doing this exercise and building that in over time, hopefully that can help open up the opportunity to say, okay, I've now been disciplined about my expense situation, and I've only drawn out of my income what I need for my expenses, and I've let accumulate enough money to now go take that next course or whatever that might be.
I think one thing that's really interesting that you just kind of slipped in there is like the discipline over time. It's
Yes.
kind of a huge thing. And I think when we were talking the other day, you made the analogy like of a marathon. It's like
Yes.
every step is important to get to the finish, no matter how small it is, right? You still have to
Right.
take that step. Otherwise, you will never finish the marathon. So even in the moment, it seems kind of inconsequential because you're like, oh, it's just one step. But you're like, I can't take the next step unless I take this step. And that discipline over time, even if it's small, if not more importantly that it's small, really pays off down the road for some of the things you're getting at.
Yes, I'm really glad you brought that up. One of the biggest differences between, say, climbing and financial planning, and I think this probably is the crux of why financial planning is difficult for so many people, is the overtime piece. So again, in climbing, the risks can be very obvious. You're on the side of a cliff. We all understand the risk is falling. Like that's super easy to understand. The risk of like not having an emergency fund or being disciplined about your finances, it's more muddy. It's not as obvious what the risk is. And the risks manifest themselves over long periods of time. Whereas in climbing, the consequence is rather immediate. If you do something wrong or if you have bad habits, the consequence can be rather immediate. In the financial planning world, the consequence can, you can only really feel it when, and I've had these conversations before where you're sitting across from someone who's, 60, 65, they want to retire, but just the math just doesn't work. They just can't. They cannot support their expenses unless they keep working. So the consequences of like bad financial habits won't be felt for quite a long time, potentially. And just as humans, we're just pre-programmed to have this like this we value the here and now and the immediate so much more than the long term, that it's hard to really make a connection with those long-term potential consequences of having bad habits of, or not doing those small steps. And then the last piece of that is exactly the marathon analogy, where things you can do to improve your finances long term in many cases seem inconsequential. And a lot of times it's like I feel like people might think like, oh, I'm not going to do that because that's really not going to make a difference. And maybe it won't on the first day or the first month or even the first year, but it's really like that little bit over time. And I feel like just human nature is we just have a hard time doing that unless we can like see a tangible result quickly. We tend to not act on it or doing something. And I think good thing we both talked about the book Atomic Habits by James Clear, where he talks about this and the small little like 1% improvements over time compound into huge changes. And the marathon is a good visual because it's just a series of lots of steps, and you cross this large distance with just a lot of little steps. And it's just a pretty easy analogy to visualize.
Well, I think also it's interesting, like when you have an expense, whether it's like, say, for a, hey, enough, Nigel, thank you. Whether it's like, I'll use the example of a car, right? You have to borrow money and get a car, right? It's not any different than trying to put that little bit away, right? It's this thing. And at first it's like kind of uncomfortable, like, oh, I gotta pay this money, you know. And I've just gotten to this point, like when I have to buy a car, you know, and I have some sort of loan that I have to pay off, I try to get that done very quickly. But once it's paid off, I'm like, I'm used to the discomfort of paying that thing every month. Like, oh, I hate paying this. But at that point, I'm like, I'm kind of used to it. So I keep paying myself that money. I usually drop it down a little bit to give myself a little high five. But yes, now I'm saving up for the next car, because I'm like, I'm already used to paying this thing. I'm not going to just go blow this money or whatever. Like, because I know, like you said, hopefully 10 years down the road, I'll need another car. And by that point, I'll have a pretty good chunk of cash to go into the dealership. Like, hey, I need another car. Or at the very least, if something comes up, whether it's a big maintenance thing, I might have a little buffer there. But once I'm used to that discomfort, I tend to keep it going, knowing that that discipline gives me something in the long term.
Yes, 100%. Like that's it's such a common way of structuring like an income plan, or like the what do you do with what's left over type of plan is like, all right, well, you're paying this money already, so you know you can part with it. And it's super important what you said there, the little high five. I think those moments are super important, where it's like you paid something off, you add a little bit back to your just pure discretionary cash flow. But maybe you save 60-70% of what you were spending. And I do hear this a lot of time too, where it's like, you know, someone's like, oh, you know, I just needed pay for a new brakes and new tires, and I really wasn't expecting that. And it's like, really? Like brakes and tires, kind of, you know, it's a big chunky expense, you know, it's like $600-$800 depending on the car you drive. But it's like, you kind of know around when those things are going to come, you know, unless something like breaks or you get a flat or something like that. But just like, that's one of those. And actually that's a great thing about expenses, is again, just being aware of these things that are big, chunky, irregular expenses, but they're expected. Like, you know, you're going to have to replace your tires eventually. It just doesn't happen that often. So it can kind of sneak up on you. And if you're just constantly putting money away, or the term that I, you know, it's like escrowing money away into some separate place to deal with those expenses, like buying new ropes if you have to buy new ropes, or buying new gear if you have to buy new gear. Like, those can be big ticket items if you're not planning ahead for it.
So Dan, now that we've kind of like done the expenses side, done the income side, have some strategy in place just for our own discipline, and now we have like this little like, oh, there's the money in between, what's left over. So what are some of your, like, as you're kind of walking someone who's new at this through, like, well, here are some options we could do with this money. Like, what are your thoughts as that person's at that point?
Yeah. So back to kind of like building a progression, right? Is like, there's going to be the foundational pieces that you want to do first. And you don't necessarily have to do like number one first, and then finish number one and then move on to number two. Some things you can do simultaneously, but it's just important to kind of think of, you know, not getting ahead of yourself. Just like building your technical skills, physical skills, mental skills in the climbing world. You just gotta, like, you know, like my own experience, right? It's like I started leading trad climbing. Really just, okay, I have to let the trying hard physically and climbing hard kind of go by the wayside while I learn this skill, and then progress into it. So I kind of talked about the first thing already, is that emergency fund, right? That emergency fund is kind of like that bedrock that makes a lot of future financial planning things possible. Like, the best possible retirement plan or the best possible investment gets derailed if you need to take money out of it because of some emergency that you could have just had an emergency fund for in the first place. So that emergency fund's super, super important. So if you're like just starting out and you're kind of starting from a clean slate, it's really like in the beginning, just prioritize anything that's left over, building up that emergency fund. And think of it in like number of months, like how many months could I be off work and financially still be okay, right? And even just like a lot of my clients getting laid off around COVID and stuff like that, you know, having 6, 7, 8 months of not having income, or with unemployment and things like that, the income might have been less than what they were used to. That emergency fund, I really can't stress enough, because it really does, back to the high level ideas, right? It allows you to do things from a position of power, to where you're unlikely to be derailed because of some emergency. And then the other things that you're building on top of it won't come crumbling down. I'm sure you could come up with a great analogy or parable where it's like you could be, you know, super technically skilled, but if you don't do that one obvious, simple thing, all of the more complicated things don't really matter as much. And the emergency fund is like that. It really is as important of like the put the helmet on, close the system. Like it's that, it's of that important in financial planning. Then you get into like, okay, people hear about different accounts. Does your employer have a 401k with a match, or a SEP, or simple, or IRAs, or Roth IRAs, or just non-retirement accounts, just brokerage accounts where you can buy investments and buy all of these things? And again, trying to think of language that climbers and guides will understand is kind of like different belay devices in a way. To their foundation, they all are built to perform the same very basic function. It's like provide friction so one person can belay the other person, right? But they all have their specific pros, cons, nuances, you know, situations where you use one over the other, you know, and in many cases you'll have multiples, you'll have two of them or three of them based on your specific circumstance. There might be a reason to have more than one or more than two. You can't drop one in financial planning, so you don't have to worry about that. But you kind of get the idea there, right? They all kind of have their different pros and cons. I'm a huge fan of the Roth IRA, and I think this is kind of the next step above an emergency fund, where you can kind of do more than one thing at the same time. Where, and let me take a step back. Any qualified retirement account. Personally, I don't love the word retirement because it means different things to different people, or it has this kind of like old connotation of like you hit a point in time in your life where you just like quit working and you go on a permanent vacation for the rest of your life. It's not really what happens in most situations. I try to speak more about like financial independence or financial freedom, where you get to a point where you've accumulated enough financial assets or business assets or hard assets like real estate. You've built up enough assets in your life to where your nest egg, which is a combination of all of those things, can provide financial income so that you no longer have to, and that's the key word there, you no longer have to add to it, right? The financial assets you've accumulated can now sustain your expenses, can now sustain your lifestyle, and you no longer have to work, right? That's kind of like where you've achieved financial independence, or financial freedom at that point. Most people choose to keep working. Most people choose to work longer than they have to. Again, this is just my anecdotal experience, but most people choose to maybe scale back instead of just retire completely, or change careers into something that maybe they're more passionate about, but has some more financial risks to it, or maybe it's just not as financially lucrative. So again, this is why your individual circumstance is so super important. Because what is the quote unquote retirement for you is going to be completely different than somebody else. And these, I'm using air quotes here, retirement accounts, like they're just accounts that provide some benefit in and it's usually a tax benefit in exchange for something you give up, which is usually access. And I can get into the, you know, you can look this stuff up pretty easily, but you can get into the nuances of that. But back to why I really like the Roth IRA is because it's kind of like this first step into some sort of like a formal retirement savings, and anyone can open one up at any of the major, you know, your banks, broker dealers, you know, Fidelity, Vanguards of the world, all the online brokerages, but you put money into it and invest it, whether that's in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, any of those things. Again, I could do 12 hours of podcasts on just all of the nuances of those things. And I think the example I used there was, it's like, think of all the different manufacturers and different shapes of carabiners. It's like, they're all carabiners. They all do kind of the same thing. A lot of it is personal preference. But there's like tons of little nuance where one person will swear by one person will swear by another. It all just really depends on what you use. But the Roth IRA is nice because you can put money in. It grows over time. That's the idea, right? Hopefully you put it in something that will grow over time. And that growth you get when you take the money out down the road will be tax-free. So it kind of like insulates you from future taxation. You don't get any tax benefit to put the money in. While the money's in there, it doesn't get taxed. So maybe you're earning interest and dividends and gains. If you buy something, a share of something at one price, it goes up in value. You don't pay tax while the money's in there. The unique thing about the Roth, though, and why I like it as a complement to an emergency fund is you can pull back out what you put in, right? So if you put in, say, $5,000 into a Roth and it, over the couple of years, you do really well investing and it grows to $10,000, you have $10,000, $5,000 is gains, $5,000 is your contributions. You can pull those contributions out without any sort of penalty. If you need to. And then if you pull out the gains, you pay taxes and a penalty until you're age 59 and a half. So this is the give and take. This is like you get tax-free growth over time in exchange for what do you give up? Well, that gain has to stay in there until you're age 59 and a half, right? So in the retirement account landscape, you're usually getting something. And maybe that's of a benefit to you, but you don't, you know, it's depends on your situation. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but you're giving something up and that's usually access. Usually you want to put your retirement funds and just leave them there. Like that's like money that you're not going to use until a certain age, but the Roth is extra flexible because you can take your contributions out. Whereas in just a typical a brokerage account or like a Robinhood account or TD Ameritrade, any of these like online where you can like buy stocks and things like that, you can invest. If it's a non-retirement account, it's just a plain vanilla, we would call it non-qualified account. Qualified just means it has some sort of tax qualification. Then that means you're paying taxes as you go. If you get interest, dividends, gains, you pay taxes on those things every single year. It does can get a little bit complicated. But there is no catch, right? There's no time frame where you have to leave it in or anything like that. So really like picking and choosing what account is right for you is just all about deciding what you want to get in exchange for what you're giving up. And usually it's getting some form of tax efficiency in exchange for limiting your access to that money to some degree. And then there's, you know, there's a lot of nuance there that I'm kind of brushing over because it's not super important, I think, for the whole mindset of it. Really, it becomes like more of a conversation of like, they're all good. They all can be good. It's just a matter of applied to the right situation, the right way.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's no perfect system, right?
You're
Exactly. always trading something to gain something. That's the key. I mean, I oftentimes, like when I'm working, try to build lots of overlapping systems that kind of can do a similar thing, like navigation's a good example, or communication's a good example, where I'm using different tools. Some tools I may never touch unless I absolutely have to, right? It's the big red
Yeah.
button. But some tools are very useful for me to go back and forth or whatever, and give me a lot of flexibility in some ways. And that way I can kind of, as the situation unfolds, and if it unfolds negatively, I can pull on these tools differently as the need is there. So I like the combo of, like, some things I'm just going to leave in the back and not even touch it unless I absolutely have to. And then some things, like, I can pull from if I need to augment the things I'm already doing to try to, like, make the situation reasonable, right? But I can, like, oh, I can pull from this if I need a little more, whatever it is. And that Roth IRA seems like a really great step for someone who's just entering into this world and trying to start laying some really good foundational things, because you could pull from that if you needed just a little bit more because something came
Yeah.
up.
Yeah. And that's a great analogy. It makes, it definitely does add kind of like this extra layer where it's like a hybrid in a sense that it's like, yes, this is long-term savings, but if push came to shove and I had to pull money from it, I can take back what I've contributed to it, and I'm not like shooting myself in the foot, so to speak. Which can be valuable. And like there's so many different things you can do, different accounts, different account types and stuff like that. But to some extent, you also have to think of like simplicity. And I kind of akin this to like, when you start putting a rack on your harness and it starts getting really heavy, you then start to ask yourself like, is this number five really work? Is this something I really need? Maybe not, right? So in the financial landscape, it's like maybe some account might add some value, but is it adding enough value to overcome just the added complexity that it's adding into your whole situation? So that's really something to think about too. And I think a lot of times we get caught up in like, maybe you don't have an employer-sponsored plan. You don't have a 401k, or there's no match or anything like that. There are other options, right? That doesn't preclude the top of the funnel thing of just like saving money somewhere that's, just at an arm's reach. And we didn't kind of talk about this yet, but it's important that when you're saving for something, whether that's the next course you're taking in the next 2 years, or the next car, or the formal retirement savings, or your emergency fund, it's what I found better that money, yes, you want it to be accessible, but you don't want to be able to just like drive up to your bank with your checking account and take money out of an ATM, or like you want just a little bit of friction between you and the access. And, with my clients, that might just be simply calling me and saying, hey, could you please send me this amount of money? Sure, great. I can do that. Easy. But just the fact that they have to pick up the phone and call allows that emergency fund to remain an emergency fund and not just, my checking's a little light, so I'm going to push money from my savings over to my checking and spend it. Right. That is super, super, super common. And this is super individual. Some people have amazing discipline and this might not matter to them, but other people don't have as much financial discipline, and having the money kind of out of sight, out of mind is better for them. Right. So this is just something to reflect on yourself and understand your own financial habits, and knowing that. And again, I'm sure there are analogies from the climbing world where it's like this, where you really have to self-reflect and know that, okay, hey, am I likely to just spend this money if it's super, super accessible to me? If I am, then I probably should have it somewhere else, right? Maybe it's still accessible, but it's just maybe I Maybe I sign up for paperless statements so I don't get them in the mail. And I don't even really know how to log into the account. I can if I really tried, but little simple behavioral things like that can make a huge difference long term.
Yeah, I actually don't like autopay because I like to be reminded and I like the physical act of every month going, oh, I have this expense. I need to pay this. Because autopay is just like, I have a few things that just, subscriptions to whatever, Caltopa or whatever that happen every year. And that just autopays. I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. But I like the discipline of like, no, I don't need to pay this now. But I also like what you're saying. The simplicity is pretty key. One of my grandfathers was a banker in this little small bank here in Maine, and like he was so disciplined with money. Like he would watch the ticker tape and be like, look at all of his stocks, and then figure out in his head like, oh, I just made or lost this. And he was like super on it. And I'm just kind of like, please help me. I don't understand all of this. So I put the money in here, and I take it out of the jar, and I put it into here. And I should call you if I want to take it out of this. So I like it simple and some friction. So
Yeah,
we've got
instant
8 minutes to kind of bring
back to
this
square.
home. So where are we
Yeah,
taking it?
so one of the things you just mentioned is important too, is like when you get into that, and again, this is all progression. When you get into that state of the progression where you're now like investing, maybe you're buying stocks or mutual funds or ETFs, and I'm happy to have another podcast where we talk about what all those things are. But just think of them as like the account is a bucket, and you can put things in that bucket: stocks, bonds, ETFs, mutual funds. Stock is just a form of ownership. You are literally like, if you buy a share of Apple stock, you are a part owner of the company Apple. So you want Apple to do well. You want Apple to sell a lot of phones and make a profit. And as owner of that business, you participate in that profit through the form of dividends, where they pay some of that profit to you, or they reinvest the profit back into the business to make the business bigger, so the share price should rise. But then also knowing that there's a supply and demand and emotional component to the stock market, which makes the volatility happen, which is why stocks go up and down quite a lot. But they, like, a company successful like Apple, their stock will go up over time, because the business gets bigger and bigger and bigger and more successful. So that's kind of like the general idea there, is you just open an account, you put money in it, and you buy things with that, assets, right? You're exchanging your currency, which is just the medium of exchange we use to buy and sell goods. You're exchanging your currency for assets: stocks, which is ownership of a company; bonds, which is debt of a company, right? So you're buying someone else's debt. They are paying you interest, as opposed to you paying someone interest for like a car loan or something like that. Those are like the two basic fundamental financial assets. And then, of course, there's real estate and things like that. And then, like, ETFs and mutual funds are just baskets of stocks and bonds. So rather than, like, if you wanted to own 500 different companies all at once, rather than going out and buying individual shares of 500 companies, you could just buy a share of an ETF that owns the S&P 500, which is like 500 large US companies. So it's just like, it's a simplified way of getting access to lots of different companies. But for some people, and again, this comes back to that self-reflection, seeing values fluctuate can be emotionally very difficult for some, right? And this is why the progression is important. Start off slow, start off simple, and add layers as time goes on, because sometimes the complexity could become really overwhelming if you just really just like dive in. Like I mentioned before, I have, friends who send me screenshots of their phone where they're trading all these crazy things on Robinhood or something like that. And it's like, dude, like, you're just going to get yourself in trouble, right? It's not a disciplined, that's not investing. That's more gambling, but with stocks and bonds and things like that. Investing long term is like converting your currency, which is depreciating over time, right? As more and more money is printed and more Currency exists, like the value, and we all know this, inflation, the value of a dollar goes down over time, right? So your currency is inflationary. And so you want to, over time, convert that currency into desirable, scarce assets, stocks, bonds, real estate, land, things, you know, things like that. It's going to be, the mix is going to be different for everybody. I'll tell you, I know a ton of people, a handful of my clients, that they want nothing more than to save up enough money so they can buy a nice big piece of land up in Maine, go build a small house and get out of here and go live where you live, basically.
Oh, it's my plan.
Right.
I'm on.
Nice. Yeah, that's your plan. Right. So I think that's a good frame of reference, is that kind of like, forget the fine-tuned details. It's really the long-term savings and investing is this long-term habit of converting the currency you earn, that leftover money after you pay your expenses, which you know what your expenses are, you know how you can control them, you know what your income is, you know the levers that you can pull to control that. Just being aware of those things is super important. You've built your emergency fund over time, and then you've started to systematically convert some of that leftover income into desirable assets, whether that's, you know, high quality businesses, stocks, that most of the stocks that I buy myself are companies that I'm a customer of and I really enjoy their products or services. I understand how the company makes a profit, why the company is important to our economy. And just doing that in small bits and pieces over time, again, back to the over time, because it does, it takes time. And as humans, we can be very impatient and we want things to happen very quickly. But this is like one of those things that it really just does take a lot of steps over a long period of time. And it's important to just start with those basic foundations. But yeah, I'm going to stop myself because I know, like, the more I get into these, like, the nuances of investing and stocks and bonds, like, we could just go on and on and on about it. I think those, like, those basic mindset pieces are super important. And then when it comes to, like, talking to your advisor about something, is really just coming to them with those basic things already done, right? Where it's like, if you're confident in your financial situation, meaning income, expenses, what's left over, and you can provide those things, that then allows the financial planner to do their job more effectively. Self-reflection about the type of person you are, whether you're a risk taker or not, and what kind of what you want out of your career. And again, we're talking to guides here. So knowing those things we talked about, those different risks that you might face as a guide, and make a plan, even though you know the plan's likely not going to go to plan, that doesn't mean you shouldn't make the plan in the first place.
Nice. Right.
And change it as new information becomes available.
Speaking the same language, damn. Telling you, we're speaking the same language, just different fields. Well, damn, I really appreciate that. I really appreciate how articulate you have been about all this, and, you know, laying down some of this foundational mindset that allows us to kind of ultimately move forward to the more complex stuff.
I really hope there's some nuggets in there that people can take away and utilize in their careers.
I hope so too. So on that note, we're about to get booted off free Zoom again. But yeah, I really appreciate it. And let's stay in touch. Maybe we'll go climb.
Yeah, likewise. Appreciate you, Dick. And I'll send you some photos. I'm headed to the Gunks tomorrow. So,
oh, awesome.
Hopefully we'll have a great weekend.
Awesome. Well, have fun out there.
Thanks, man.
Stay safe. All right, see you, Dan. You too.
Take care.